Yeah, part of the lesson. Ish. Genesis 3:14. Jesse, can you read that?
So the Lord God said to the serpent, because you have done this, you are cursed more than all cattle and more than every beast of the field. On your belly you shall go, and you shall eat dust all the days of your life.
So actually, if we look at it, God only cursed two things. He cursed the snake, because have you done? So he was more harsh with the serpent, and then he cursed the ground also. But then he just made things harder for the man and the woman. He didn't actually curse them. But there's a lot of theories, and I read a lot of theories. Now, serpent was translated from Nasa. So it means the hissing sound. So like a snake, or you had a Komodo dragon, they hiss also. Actually, there's some beetles that hiss too. It's crazy. Now, there's questions would come up as far as the serpent in the garden. Was that Satan? Most people say it was Satan. Or was it Satan convinced the serpent, the most cunning of the creatures, to deceive Eve? Or did he possess the snake or the serpent? Now, as far as I know, snakes cannot talk. I don't know. Maybe did they lose their voice along with their legs? Or does Satan actually have no legs right now? Does he crawl around on his belly? Those are questions. Now, there is a possibility as far as the serpent, maybe he's one of a kind. You know, and maybe has a mate, but his offsprings, because whatever comes forth, his offsprings would be just like dad and have no legs. Or is it just really harsh? A harsh reminder every time we see a snake that the importance of not going against God, the importance not deceiving or stumbling somebody else. Now, theories are just like feelings, right? Sometimes they're just like feelings. Oh, I think it's this way, or I think it's that way. They're kind of along tradition. Tradition has the serpent is a snake, and tradition has an apple as the fruit, the forbidden fruit. Now, a lot of people now are going, well, it wasn't really an apple. So there's a lot of turmoil as far as, was it a snake or wasn't it? It makes sense and it fits that snakes don't have legs and they crawl around their belly. So it does make sense. And I know this, I don't really have an answer. All that to say, I don't have concrete evidence saying, oh yeah, well this is exactly. I mean, we have our bits and information. But there are things that we're never going to fully know. There are mysteries that we may never comprehend. And it's why is because we can't fathom or know everything God knows. We physically can't. You know, there's impossibilities. But he will, he's promised he's going to take care of us, and he will let us know those mysteries in his timing, the mysteries we need to know. Now, I will, if I find any more answers, I will surely tell you. But Proverbs 3:5-6, Michelle. So we need to lean on him. Even though there's things out there, we have questions. But our faith is in him. And in the truth, he tells us the truth. But there's some things that may have been lost over the centuries. Now on to 1 Timothy, where Paul is teaching Timothy. So sorry, where Paul is teaching Timothy how to choose people to help him, to help him lead. Timothy had this big, huge task of leading the church. And he doesn't have to do it alone. You know, we're here to help others, and others are here to help us. We need to learn how to ask for help and how to receive help. So Timothy, 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1. And this is a faithful saying. If a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work. So the New Testament Greek, the word for bishop is episcopos. Probably mispronouncing it, but it means overwatcher or overseer. So a leader of the church, somebody that's over somebody else, and he watches what's going on, he's leading. Now, when the King James had the Bible translated in English, that described a bishop. Now, there's a lot of churches nowadays that don't have bishops. Sometimes people think of a bishop and you think of a chessboard. But a lot of translations will go back and say overseer and not bishop. Paul is saying if somebody desires to be a leader in the church, that is a very good thing. That's a great thing to desire. You know, and people desiring, that's a good thing. However, we need to make sure they're doing it for the right reasons. Plus, we need to make sure that they're the right person for the job. Now, Paul needs to slow his roll a little bit because you shall not judge, right? Says the Lord. Because we've all heard that. In Matthew 7, verse 1, Jesse? So a lot of people like that verse, and they like to stop right there. Go no further. Just that. Don't judge. Don't judge me. I'm doing what I'm doing. But let's go ahead and look at verse 2 and go ahead and read that, Jesse. So what Jesus is talking about is unfair judgment or harsh judgment. When people who are doing the judgmenting or judging are guilty of similar sins. Do not judge rudely, because you in turn will be judged rudely. In the Bible, somebody's works are often referred to as produced fruits. You know, that's their works. Their fruit of their labor is their works. So if we could imagine a fruit stand, like you went to a fruit stand or you went to the fruit section of the Safeway or Walmart, do we not judge? You know, because I don't like mushy bananas. I don't know quite who does unless they're making banana bread, right? So if there was only a way I could tell before I peel it, if it was mushy, right? Well, you can see it. But what if there was this sign that said, don't judge the bananas? Would that be crazy? Just buy them. I don't care what they look like. Buy them anyways. So because we care about the ones who are being overseen, because we care about how they're being led, Paul tells Timothy the overseers need to be qualified in the sense they need to be judged, if you will. We need to know what kind of person they will be or who they are. 1 Timothy chapter 3, 2 through 5, Michelle.
A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of a wife,
So blameless doesn't mean perfect, because if it did, we probably wouldn't have so many church leaders or any at all. But what it means is the ones around you can't blame you or call you out and say, oh, they were sinning. I saw them yesterday. They're in sin right now. Husband of one wife, or in other words, a one woman kind of guy. Right? A lot of people have some legalistic views on this as far as of polygamy and as far as divorce and remarry. But let's just focus on facts. So the facts are typically not always the case, but employers like to hire married people, or at least they used to, like to hire married people over single people. And it might sound unfair, but there's reasons behind it. Because if somebody's married, typically they're more mature. Like I said, some cases it's not, but you think that they're mature. And also that they're more settled down. They're not moving from here to there on a whim or just, a spur of the moment. Let's just move. You know, if they're married, it's harder to move because there's more people involved. Also, if they're a one-woman guy, they're not looking for a wife in the church or the next sister wife in the church, right? So they're not being unfair and like, you sit over here. I'm going to take you and give you special leadership because I like you. And you, I don't care. You go clean the toilets, right? So, they need to be fair and just with everybody, not just the ones they want to get to know better for other reasons. There's also sexual immorality as far as their thoughts, as far as a single person thinking more about women than anything else. So I feel like it's talking more about this than divorce or remarry and hashing all those problems out. Tempered. It means well-balanced. It's kind of like the Goldilocks test. This one's too hot. This one's too cold. This one's just right. He's well balanced. Sober-minded. Doesn't actually have anything to do with alcohol. It's about controlling your body or your actions. Being clearer in thought. Most of these are simple and make sense. Of somebody who's a good person. People like lists, and they like them typically for two reasons. Either they want to really be on that list, or they really don't want to be in that list. Good behavior, like I said, simple. Conduct themselves orderly, following the rules. And then an overseer able to teach, or qualified to teach. He has to know what he is leading for. And it doesn't always mean as far as talking to a huge crowd. It can refer to a small setting. One who doesn't shy away from a teachable moment. That he has. He's well spoken. He's educated. Not given to wine. And it's pretty obvious, is not being a drunk, not being an alcoholic where that's your driving force and you need to have that. There's a lot of bad decisions made because of alcohol. And the overseer doesn't have the chances to make bad decisions because it's somebody's life's in the line. Violent. Some Bibles will even say, not a striker. So we don't want a leader that's first reaction is to yell or hit. That wouldn't be very loving of them. not greedy. Money is the root of all kinds of evil. You know, the point is if they're always looking out to get rich, you know, what happens when, like, say, an offering plate goes around? It's like, ooh, I could use some of that. Or what are their motivations as far as helping people? Are they trying to do it to get something out of it? Being gentle. It's being kind and truly caring, not just on the surface, okay, I'll help this person out because I have to. It's actually caring about others. Quarrelsome goes along with not being violent, yet it also includes not fighting or arguing even if you're in the right. You know, there's just sometimes where you could, it's off-putting when you see somebody arguing, even if they're in the right, but they just always start yelling. Covetousness. Wanting something what somebody else has. So it goes along with greed, right? And again, these are two, they usually when the Bible says it a second time, and they really want to emphasize this, is, you know, we need to be able to, or at least the leaders need to be that, where they want to help without anything in return. One who rules his house well. So the family, a family is the center of a good society. If it's a good society, there's going to have good families. The family is the base, the nucleus of that. Just like the family is the center of the church. Children, this is something adults may not tell you all the time, but you shape the future. You will shape the future on how the future will be. How a person takes care of their home, that's the same way he's going to take care of God's house. And what is taught in that home transfers over to God's house. If you are not taught right or correctly, then there's no way you're going to be able to share correctly or to continue on teaching correctly to the next generation. You know, it's been seen, and we see it in history, is that if they want to take over something, they go after the youth first because they know eventually it's going to get their way. 1 Timothy chapter 3, 6 and 7. Not a novice, least being puffed up with pride, he falls into the same condemnation as the devil. Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach, into the snare of the devil. Not a novice. So a novice is somebody was just beginning. Just learned, you know, he's wet behind the ears, he's just a new kid, right? That person should not be in leadership, being brand new to learning about God. You know, that quick rise to leadership can easily puff somebody up with pride. And that's what got the devil in trouble in the very beginning, is pride. A good testimony among those around them. You know, people need to see that he's a good person and feel that. It's kind of like how just saying that we're Christian or telling people we're Christian, you know, we represent God. At that point in their head, we're representing God. You know, and unfortunately, there's been those who Christians, and they might mislead somebody, and they're like, oh, well, then all Christians are that way. But it's doubling down if the person who's in leadership, what that's saying is the church is thinking, well, this is the guy. You need to be just like this guy. So you need to be extra careful, extra steps to make sure that it's not the wrong guy. That you don't have somebody in there what people are doing, walk away instead of going towards. You know, we do not want to misrepresent God. That'd be the worst thing. You know, he just might knock the legs out from underneath us. A little serpent reference there. 1 Timothy chapter 3, 8 through 13. Three slides. So deacons, what deacon means is servants. Servants. So, and we've seen there's, it's pretty much the same qualifications, right? The same qualifications as the overseer. You know, we could kind of look at it as such, as far as, you know, the overseer, you know, will see needs out there in the congregation. Right? And he delegates how those needs will be met. The deacons are the ones who physically take care of the needs. You know, the ones what run around and do things. Also, deacons, they're not required or necessary to be qualified to teach. They can be. But they might be just the sort what likes to work behind the scene, right? And that's where they like to be. Both are very important. Both are needed, you know, to take care of the family and the church. One needs the other. Because without one, you know, there'd be no leadership. Without others, there'd be like, well, who's doing all this work? I can't do it alone. So it's kind of like our body. We need certain parts, and they're both very important. You know, not one over the other, but they both need to be needed. 1 Timothy chapter 3, 14 through 16. Michelle? Paul needs Timothy. You know, he needs Timothy to know that it's very important that the church needs to be represented well. You know, he'd love to do it himself, but again, Paul can't do everything. He delegates what Timothy needs to do. It's based on the truth. The church needs to be based on the truth. If people can't see that, can't feel that, people have walked away and they will walk away from Jesus. The mystery of faith in godliness. Now, if we read a mystery novel, I don't know if you like mystery novels or not, somewhat. Sometimes they're interesting, or a mystery movie. If we go to the very end of that book, or the end of the movie, we know who did it, right? But it's still a mystery novel, because there might be somebody out there who didn't know it, right? They don't know that mystery. We know the mystery of faith and godliness. That God is real, that he came down to earth in flesh, that Jesus is equal to God and was justified by the Spirit, that angels witnessed his birth, witnessed his resurrection, that he is preached among all the nations, Gentile or Jew, and that he is believed all around the world, and he ascended up into heaven. You know, we know all that. That mystery is not a mystery to us anymore. Yet, the world may not know it. They might still see it as a mystery. And that is our charge, to tell others about the mystery, to tell them about the end of the book. You know, we do this to represent Jesus in everything we do. And we need to do it well. I'm going to pray and then we'll do a communion.